Water. Earth. Fire. Air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased, in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series, Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. Just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a month had passed, and my cousin and I discovered that Avatar, a show about an airbender named Aang, would start streaming on Netflix in a few weeks. And although our podcasting skills are great, we had a lot of episodes to watch before we were ready to podcast for anyone. But we believe Aang saved us from the chaos of our world. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Hi, everyone. So this is it. We're concluding our coverage of the epic tale of Avatar, The Last Airbender. It's been It has been a long and incredible ride, and we've loved every minute of it.
So much. Loved it. Oh, my God.
I'm Andrea, and Paul and I are cousins who love fantasy and sci-fi and talk about it endlessly.
Yeah, and you know, where we are, Team Avatar, they've grown. They're a little larger now, a little stronger. They got Zuko, they got Suki joining in the fold, and now Aang can truly master all the elements, firebending. Just has one little thing to figure out. Tiny little thing.
Tiny, minor detail.
Yeah. How's he going to beat Ozai without murking him?
Big question. Yeah. If you've been listening to our previous Atla episodes, you know that each episode we discuss several chapters of the series and provide a reflection on the themes and share what we have learned. This week, we're discussing episodes 15 and 16. So if you haven't watched through episode 16, which is the series finale, go watch it and come back when you finish.
Kin Folklore, as you know by now, will have adult content. So if your cursing threshold ends at monkey feathers, don't get on Bae's bad side. Turn back now. But please, don't leave out your makeout sesh with the moon and your dating history. And, you know, probably don't bring up the time that she took all the L's against your nemesis. If you do, maybe don't ask her a favor right after. So here we are. Back on Ember Island. I like that place. Scene of the famed episode, The Beach. The episode begins at a long abandoned beach house that we've been to before, that Zuko was there. And, you know, Katara's wondering, is this the safest place to hide at the Fire Lord's house from the Fire Lord? And Zuko's like, yeah, this guy, like, never comes here because it's from a time when my family was actually happy. When was that, Zuko? When was your family happy? But it starts out really cool. Aang and Zuko are practicing their firebending when Sokka and Suki arrive with the flyer for a play called The Boy and the Iceberg. They're famous. There's a play about their life. Sokka wants to go, but Katara's a little skeptical. Should we really show up to a play about us? You know, how we are? And you know, eventually, the gang is like, let's go.
I don't know why. Katara was right. I would never want to watch a play about myself. But anyway.
Yeah, they'll find out real quick. It wasn't exactly what they signed up for. Aang is going to be... Aang really wanted this one. He really wanted to go check it out. Oh, yeah, they wrote a play about me. Cool. All right, you're about to find out. Avatar Day did not teach you a lesson, I guess. When they arrive in the theater, Aang tries to get a seat next to Katara. But Zuko ain't having it. Zuko's like, nope. I don't even know what you're talking about. Dude, why don't you just sit where you want to sit over there? Being so extra.
As if Zuko can tell anyone they're being extra. But it's true. Aang is trying not so smoothly to make his moves. It's not a good looking.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's like, you know, the guy who does the yawn arm around the girl move in the movie theater. Oh, man. Zuko's helping you out, bro. That was your next move, and it wasn't going to work. So here we go. This play is crazy, okay? It is a full overview of what we've seen for the whole series, like all the different things from when they discovered Aang and the iceberg all the way up to current day and a little bit beyond. But so it has such high notes as Katara being super over dramatic.
Super over. Hope is all I can hold on to.
I love the idea of hope.
Oh, I'm tear bending.
I'm tear bending is the best. I'm tear bending. And I'm so hungry that I'm tear bending. I'm starving is Sokka's line. It's pretty hilarious.
So, it's so bad. Anyway.
Oh my gosh. And then Zuko is, you know, actually pretty dead on. It's actually a pretty dead on impression of Zuko. Except, you know, his scar is on the wrong side. All right. That's the biggest thing. Iroh is a glutton. I didn't like this Iroh impression. It was weird. I didn't like it. I didn't love it. And the blue spirit is extremely different from Zuko. Like, it's a different character. In fact, they change it where instead of Zhao capturing the Avatar, it was now Zuko capturing the Avatar. And both of them look at each other. Aang and Zuko look at each other like, they got this a little wrong. So it's pretty funny. Fuckboy Jet is back. And he is appropriately a mess.
A total mess. Oh, I was God. Just like, he's also incredibly overdramatic. And also, like, Katara is swooning. It was a mess.
Yeah. It's really, really funny. And then you got Sokka basically is there and making out with Yue. And then Yue's like, I gotta go. I'm the moon. And Suki's like, you never told me you made out with the moon spirit. And he's all like, shh, please, I'm watching. Which Suki doesn't love very much. I don't blame her. And Aang is distraught that he's being played by a woman. Why? Why is he so distraught? What is wrong?
I had trouble with this too. I was like, what? I mean, I guess I wouldn't want to be played by a man. Although later, Toph has no problem with
that. I've loved it. It's great.
Yeah, Toph is like, I'm all for it. So.
Oh, wait. Andrea, look over there. It's the Great Divide. Let's just skip that. Let's fly over. So good. So during the intermission, everyone is pretty upset about how they are being depicted. Toph tells them that, you know, they're upset because they're seeing the truth. Like, this is exactly like this is an exaggerated version of who everyone really, really is. So the second act has some interesting changes to these characters, too. Toph is played by a man who uses sonic waves from his mouth to see. To which Toph is like, this writer is a genius. I love it. Toph is having a good time with this. Azula is pretty funny. It's a pretty, pretty funny take on Azula. And Jet is killed by a rock. Did Jet just die?
You know, it's really unclear.
Touché.
I mean, he's dead. We already poured one out for him, right?
So he's dead. We poured one out for Jet. I mean, we only poured half a bottle out of the, like, shabby Chardonnay. Okay? Like, shit was not good. So then Katara and Zuko hook up in the cave. I thought you were the Avatar's girl. The Avatar? He's like my brother. And Aang is salty about this.
Very salty.
And Zuko turns on Iroh and tells him he hates him and that he smells bad.
Which I was like, what? Why did they add that? I don't understand.
Oh, man. This is, you know, low-key, this is a lot of Fire Nation propaganda that's going on in this film also.
Yeah, totally.
It's funny. So during the next intermission, Katara goes to find Aang, who left after Katara's onstage character said the Avatar was like a little brother and she didn't think about him romantically. Toph talks to Zuko, which honestly, in an episode that was kind of like a recap full episode and also a little bit like it was a little bit funny, you know, it was super funny. This was really heartfelt one. Toph is mentioning to him, you know, everyone's upset, but she doesn't understand why. And she said, you're looking more down than you normally are. And that's saying something. And Zuko explains it's like seeing the worst mistakes he's ever made on stage. And mm-hmm. It's a bit upsetting.
Yeah.
And I can understand that because he's had a rough go. And, you know, it's like he's trying to turn his life around and it's like a reminder of where he's come from.
And that he never actually got to apologize to Iroh because by the time he got to Iroh had bounced. So.
Yeah. And you know, so it is tough. And then, you know, Toph says something that's really insightful and very comforting. And it throws me back to how far Toph has actually grown. We don't actually give enough credit to this sometimes as watchers. But remember, this was Katara's role for her. And now here's the newcomer to the group, and she's taking on that role. And she says to him, she knows that Iroh would be proud of the path that he's on now. And he says, well, how do you know? Because I spent some time with him, and all he did was talk about you. It was a little bit annoying, to which Zuko laughs and says he was sorry. And she says, no, but I also thought it was kind of sweet that she explains that even though he's living out the worst moments, that this is what Iroh ultimately wanted for him. Even though he's watching that on stage, ultimately what he's doing now that he's there with them is what Iroh wanted for him. Suki and Sokka have a little conversation, to which Sokka thinks, you know, talking about her taking all the L's from Azula and getting locked up was like a good way to start, like, you know, a conversation. And she's like, listen, don't get on my bad side. I will smack a bitch.
Okay? Yeah. She's like, do you not recall that I'm a Kyoshi warrior? Like, I'm not wearing the makeup, but like, I could definitely take you.
Not only a Kyoshi warrior, but while we're talking about L's, I did whoop that ass when we first met. Okay. While we're talking about those, you guys lose a lot. She's not wrong. She did say you guys lose a lot, and she's not wrong. So, but then Sokka follows up with, hey, can you help me sneak backstage? To which Suki says, yeah, I can help get you back there. And, you know, she does. And he sneaks back there, and he gives the actor that's playing him some tips that he can add into his depiction of him. Give a little color, you know, a little direction that maybe he didn't have. The guy asks who he is. He says, oh, you know, just an admirer of comedy. So back with Aang and Katara. Aang takes this opportunity in the middle of a war where he has 3 days to bring down the Fire Lord, and at a play that Katara never wanted to go to, in which all of them are getting dunked on the whole entire time, to say, ask how she feels about him. And Katara says that she's a little confused and that they're in the middle of a war. And Aang also is like putting words in her mouth, right? He says, is that how you really feel about me, what you said in there? And she said, what do you mean? What did I say in there? That you see me as a little brother. And she says appropriately, I didn't say that. That was an actor on a stage that says that. After expressing her confusion, Aang then takes this opportunity to kiss her.
You know how I feel about this.
Yeah, it...
I hate this so much.
It's not a good look.
I hate it so much. Like, your friend just told you that she is confused and she needs at least some time to figure out how she's feeling. Like, now is not the right moment. And he doesn't even really hear her. He just kisses her. I mean, the look on Katara's face and her anger is totally understandable. I was really upset with Aang when he did this.
100%. And the thing that's wild is he goes, I kissed you before the day of the Black Sun, and I thought we'd be together, but we're not. So you're projecting all your emotions and your thoughts about how this was going to go onto this person, including taking words from an actor on a play, not managing your emotions, and saying, do you really feel that way? Katara didn't write this play, bro. Calm down. All right? Let's just calm down. And yeah. Katara's clearly upset. Aang is highly immature. We know this, but still no excuse. Like, and Katara is clearly upset and tells him that she told him already that she's pretty confused and she leaves out, to which immediately Aang calls himself stupid because he realizes that he made a big blunder in this moment.
Yeah.
Now we're in the third act. To add insult to injury, Aang and Katara's pre-invasion kiss is turned into a brotherly handshake. Oh my God. Zuko actually leaves with them during the invasion. He's like, I'm out, Dad. I'm out. Peace. And at that point, honestly, you would think it was over.
Yeah. Sokka's like, it's going to be over. And they're like, this is the future.
To which they show us what the Fire Nation wants the future to be. So the play depicts the upcoming battle between Fire Lord Ozai and the Avatar. Azula and Zuko fight and Zuko loses. crying, "Honor!" Honor! As he goes up in flames. Oh, man. So good.
That was the best part of this entire episode, I think, actually. I think earlier I thought it was the whole Suki and the... you never told me you made out with the moon spirit, but no, this honor thing was hilarious.
It's really good. It's really, really good. Oh, man. And when Aang reaches the Fire Lord wins. Because you know what? This is the Fire Nation and a Fire Nation audience. And the crowd loves this ending. Team Avatar leaves and they're a little sad. And they're like, this is a terrible play. The worst play ever. Like. Yeah. And
not
then
impressed.
Sokka says, well, the effects were pretty good.
I thought this was a really effective way of summing up the series.
Yeah.
And getting people up to speed, even though it was wildly inaccurate. I thought it was like a great meta discussion. Like the thing with Jet was funny. The way that they did the Great Divide thing, like it was full comedy. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah, there's multiple times I feel like in this last few episodes where they're like definitely taking stabs at themselves. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's really cool. And this one was the biggest one for sure. It's
totally. The next episode is the beginning of our 4-part finale, Sozin's Comet. So Zuko is coaching Aang through a lesson and encourages him to be a bit more aggressive. Mm-hmm. It isn't going super well. Zuko accuses them all of being lazy because the others are essentially just hanging out. Like, they're not doing anything. And Sokka decides he's going to embrace the laziness and throw a beach party. This party includes Aang creating a sand appa. Toph creates like a professional grade rendering
with Bosco and everything. Bosco and the freaking Earth King, is everybody's there. It's great.
Yeah, it's also a great nod to the fact that Toph, who could not even see in sand before, is now able to bend sand, which is pretty cool.
She's amazing.
Yeah, Toph is just like a next level bender on every level. Sokka creates a sand sculpture of Suki and it's really bad. Why does Sokka keep doing this? Can someone explain to me why no one has talked to Sokka about his lack of art skills?
I mean, but there's the thing. They have. They really have told him multiple times and he just keeps going and trying. I get it. I mean, you just feel like, I gotta be good at this. I'm good at science. He's so good at science. He's so good at tech. He's good at everything. He invented the freaking submarine. Okay?
Okay, but he can't sculpt or draw. Like,
terrible. He's just horrible at
it's
this.
Really it's bad. Like, Suki thinks it's cute, but everybody else is like, it's awful. So just as they're laughing at Sokka's sculpture, Zuko comes flying out of nowhere and attacks,
just like old times.
Yep. just like old times. He chases Aang around, firebending at him, and Aang basically just runs until Zuko has him cornered, and then he finally like airbends his way out. Mm-hmm. Katara immediately confronts Zuko about attacking Aang. You know, she's like, what is wrong with you? You could have hurt him. And Zuko explains that he was teaching him a lesson and that they don't have time to sit around since Sozin's Comet is in 3 days.
Wow.
To which they all look at him like he's an idiot. And Aang admits he was never planning on fighting the Fire Lord during the comet because he needs more time to learn. And Sokka, Katara, Toph, they all agree.
I just think I guess that he's new to the group and they're still establishing trust. But damn, to leave him out of the loop like that is kind of crazy. And I get why his anxiety is like, how are you guys chilling? And what a freaking detail to leave out. Like, you're going to change the whole approach and strategy? That's crazy.
Yeah, totally.
I hear Zuko on this one.
Yeah. Zuko was definitely not... He's right here. I mean, Katara says to them, you know, says to Zuko, the point of Aang confronting the Fire Lord before the comet was so the Fire Nation didn't win the war. But since Azula already took Ba Sing Se, essentially, the war has been won. Mm. And she basically says things can't get worse. Zuko says things can be worse. He tells them about that war meeting where he attended, where he got all angsty because he thought he wasn't invited. And then it turns out he was. And in a flashback, we see that in the meeting, a general suggests that they should send more troops to the Earth Kingdom because there's a lot of tiny earth-bending rebellions. Mm-hmm. And Ozai turns to Zuko for his opinion, and Zuko tells him, listen, I've spent time in the Earth Kingdom, and the citizens are proud, and they're going to resist as long as they have hope. Ozai has an idea suddenly. The goal will be to destroy their hope. Mm. And with Azula's encouragement, Ozai decides that he will use the power of the comet to destroy the Earth Kingdom, making him the supreme ruler of everything.
I'm just going to pause and leave the four nations for a little bit. I want you to run that back and insert American politicians into that whole mix. Just not you. If you're the listener and you're thinking about sitting out this election, it can get worse. Please vote. Okay? Just what you, every time you start thinking about, think about what Ozai just said and insert our president. I want to be the supreme ruler of everything. It can get worse. Anyway, I'm done. Now we're back to the four nations. This message was brought to you by...
Zuko tells his friends that he's ashamed that he didn't say anything in the meeting, but it was a turning point for him. It's what made him realize that although he had his father's affection and attention, he had really lost himself. Team Avatar is devastated by this news. I mean, the look on Aang's face is like, this is the worst possible thing that could happen. He feels entirely unprepared. And the team reminds him that they have his back. And they all agree to do it together.
So this is like the millionth freak out that Aang has had about facing the Fire Lord after not taking it seriously. Like, you're surfing, making sculptures and icemen, and you've already had the run where you did the Day of the Black Sun and then it didn't go so well. Why is he not firebending like his life depends on it right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some avoidance in Aang. I think he understands that he's not really ready for this fight on not just a physical level, but on an emotional level.
Yeah.
And so he, like many procrastinators, he figures out a way to avoid it.
Yep.
In the next scene, Zuko teaches Aang how to redirect lightning. Mm. Aang is realizing the stakes of this mission. Katara tells him she's out of spirit water. So if he gets hit again, that's it.
I mean, I'm not like done. I mean, like, you know, nothing like Katara with a little spirit water fix up. About that spirit water. Don't really have
She's
any.
Like, I already used it on you to save your life, bruh. Like, you're going to have to face the Fire Lord without a save.
Can you imagine if that play scene would have played out the way it was in there? And like, hey, you know, put that spirit water on Zuko's face. And that's it. It's a wrap. We're not even talking about this anymore.
So he is also realizing that he will have to kill the Fire Lord before the Fire Lord kills him. Mm. Sokka comes up with a plan, because that's what Sokka does, and a drill. And he decides that they're all going to act out the attack on the Fire Lord, and Toph is going to be the villain.
I am the Melon Lord!
This is my favorite gif from Atla. Oh, like, just Toph being the Melon Lord. She's throws flaming rocks at them. The actual Melon Lord is a scarecrow that they created with a melon head. And Aang, when he gets a chance to kill the scarecrow, he can't do it.
Yeah.
He just can't do it. Sokka has to do it for him.
Yeah.
Later that night during dinner, Katara arrives with a baby picture that she believes to be Zuko. And she's looking forward to poking a little fun at Zuko. But it turns out that it's actually a picture of Ozai.
Wow.
Zuko tells them that although the baby is adorable, that baby grew up to be a monster.
And the worst father ever in the history of fathers. He's
or
not
in
wrong.
The words of Mrs. Coulter,
he's a failure as a man, a man and a failure as a father. I love it. Well done.
So Aang replies to this, but he's still a human being.
Indeed.
We need to find another way. This essentially pits Aang against the rest of the group. Aang says that this is against everything that he learned from the monks. Like, all life is sacred. You don't kill people just because you don't like them. And he blows up at the rest of the group because they don't understand his position. They're basically like, listen, but you need to restore balance and Ozai's got to go.
And he goes off on Katara really tough. Like, I mean, he singles her out. Like, she says, like, we're just trying to be helpful. And he goes off and then she has to come back at him. And it's weird. I don't know why he's like so angry at her at this point.
I think Aang is just struggling in the way that Katara felt in the Southern Raiders episode, where she was saying, this is difficult for me and I need to do this. And no one else was hearing her. That's the way Aang feels in this moment.
Fair. That's fair. That's a fair point. And, you know, that's a fair point because he's been on the opposite side, not understanding what other people's perspective of. And now he's having that happen to him. So that makes sense. I hear that.
Mm-hmm. So he storms away and Zuko tells Katara just to let him go, mm-hmm. not to follow him this time and try to talk him down. Aang decides to meditate and he falls asleep. And when he wakes up later, he hears chanting. Mm. He follows the sounds to a small island that's appeared across the way. And the next morning, when the others are getting ready to leave, they notice that Aang is not with them. Mm. He and Momo are both missing. They search and they find his footprints leading to the water. But the island that he walked to is gone.
Wow.
So that's where the trail ends. Sokka speculates that Aang is visiting the spirit world. But Zuko notes that his body is gone too. And normally Aang's spirit would go to the spirit world, but his body would be there.
And if at this point you need a reminder of how Zuko would know that, it's because he took his body from the spirit oasis and went to some cave and then went on a rant about he wasn't born lucky, but Azula was born lucky. Just a recap for you, okay? They left that out.
Not one of Zuko's finest moments. Toph notes that Momo's missing too, which leads to this funny point where Sokka freaks out because he thinks Appa has eaten Momo.
And then Zuko goes, Sokka, get out of the bison. We have serious things to talk about. It's really funny.
The group turns to Zuko in this moment and reminds him that he has the most experience tracking Aang. I would just say that this is untrue. Really, the Cabbage Man has the most experience finding Aang. But, you know, fine. Erase the Cabbage Man and give Zuko the credit.
Yeah.
Zuko takes him on Appa to the Earth Kingdom. Meanwhile, in the capital, Ozai is getting ready to depart on the airships. And Azula is behind him, looking miserable. She's clearly not doing well mm-hmm. since Mei and Ty Lee turned on her. And when she catches up, Ozai tells her, actually, he's going to be heading to Ba Sing Se with a fleet of airships and that he wants her to stay behind in the Fire Nation. Mm-hmm. Azula has a complete meltdown because she feels like he's treating her like Zuko and she's done everything that he's asked her to. In fact, they wouldn't even have Ba Sing Se mm-hmm. if it weren't for her. But he calms her and says she must stay behind and watch over the homeland as the new Fire Lord. And that he will be the supreme leader of all, the Phoenix King.
And then the Phoenix banners drop and the music hits. It's like, is this what Zuko would be if he didn't have Iroh? Like, you know, like when Zuko took off his robe and the seagulls flew out from behind and there was theme music. It was so dramatic, except way more ominous. Way more ominous.
I was just like, this whole family is not okay.
No.
Like, they have serious issues.
I'm really...
This was scary.
Scary. Okay. And it's really the point in which you're really thankful for the redemption arc of Zuko. You really start to see, like we talked about offline, when Toph says, yeah, Zuko could be worse, this is what she means. Like, this stuff is that
precisely.
You're seeing, you know?
Precisely. When Toph says things could be worse for Zuko, she is not wrong. No. This is Azula or Ozai could be who Zuko is.
Yep.
So she was dead on in that one. So Team Avatar arrives in the Earth Kingdom to a tavern and they find June, the bounty hunter with the Shirshu from season 2. Nyla, she's
back. Nyla's back.
The episode ends with Aang waking up with Momo on the island. which is in the middle of the ocean, and there is no land in sight.
How long do you think it took Nyla to get all that like perfume scent and everything out of her nostrils so that she could see again?
I mean, ages probably. I mean, they really blasted her with a lot.
Yeah, but it's wild though, right? Because like it had to only be like in our time, it's ages. In Avatar time, it's the same summer.
Oh, that's true. Good point.
That's weird. It's so weird. It's so weird. You're just like sitting here like, wow, it's crazy. So continuing with part two of Sozin's Comet, Team Avatar approaches June and she rolls Zuko pretty relentlessly. Where's you and your creepy grandpa?
I see you made up with your girlfriend.
Yeah. we're not boyfriend and girlfriend. Oh man. They see all you Zutara fans. They denied it. This is the second time.
Whatever. They have crushes. I'll die on that hill.
All right, here we go. So June agrees that she's gonna help them out with Nyla. And, you know, Nyla and Appa don't seem to have forgiven and forgotten. They're kind of like standoffish with each other. They're like, meh. But, you know, Nyla sniffs around and they got the Avatar's, you know, glider and nothing. She's got nothing. Her behavior tells June that Aang doesn't exist. And Zuko, you know, is like, what do you mean that he doesn't exist? Everyone's like, that means that he's dead? And she's like, no, if he was dead, we'd still be able to find him. It's really strange, like he doesn't exist. And so at that point, Zuko gets another idea. He said, there's only one other person that could help us in fighting Fire Lord Ozai. And he goes and gets Iroh's smelly shoe, his sandal. Good call, though. I like this call. I like the way Zuko's thinking. So now Nyla can smell that, and she starts off on the way to getting to where Iroh is, and the gang jumps on the back of Appa, and you know that's where they start heading out, and she leads them, Nyla, to the walls of Ba Sing Se. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting place.
Wow. So we're back at Ba Sing Se. There's no war at Ba Sing Se. Sorry, Judy. Had to give you a quick shout out. Anyway, Aang very much does exist. And he's wondering, though, where the hell he is. Can't figure it out. He and Momo come across a hexagon on the ground. And Aang decides that it's a good place to meditate and figure out how he can deal with this dilemma that he's in. How am I going to beat the Fire Lord without killing him? And he seeks out Roku. He says, oh, I can contact Roku. I'm going to meditate and contact Roku. Roku appears and tells him that all the past experience of Avatars are available to him. Roku doesn't know where Aang is, but he can sense he's in a deeply lost place, both spiritually and emotionally, and actually being lost. Aang tells Roku everyone expects him to kill the Fire Lord, and he doesn't know that he can do it. Roku tells Aang that during his life, he tried to show restraint and that he regretted it. He tells Aang that what he needs to know is that he needs to be decisive. Outside of Ba Sing Se, the group is encircled by a fire and awakes to find a number of familiar faces standing above them. Pian Dao, Zhong Zhong, Paku, and Bumi.
All of the masters.
What is going on? Oh my gosh, it's crazy. See everybody back together. Katara explains to Toph who all the masters are and, you know, goes to Master Paku and she's happy to see him. And Paku tells her that it's nice to greet an old master, but maybe you should say hi and give a hug to your new grandpa.
Grand got her life back together.
What? Grand. Grand is out here living her best life. She's like, oh, I got rid of the kids. I got Paku came back through. All right.
Listen, Grand was like, listen, now that you have left the patriarchy of the Northern Water Tribe, we could get it on. It's fine.
Exactly. And then he's told her he gave Grand a new betrothal necklace and everything. It's pretty cool, right? So they got a new grandpa. Sokka has a bunch of nicknames, to which Paku's like, no, just call me Paku, please. Katara asks how they all know each other, which is a great question. It's the question that the audience is asking. It's what we're asking. And Piandao tells them that they are part of an ancient order that is about philosophy, beauty, and truth. And Zuko immediately knows that it's the Order of the White Lotus and calls it out. Zhang Zhang explains that a month ago, a call went out to the members that they were needed for something important. The call came from a Grand Lotus, Iroh of the Fire Nation. Bumi realizes that someone important is missing from your group. And he looks around and he says,
Where's Momo?
Oh, good stuff, Bumi.
I loved it. It was so good.
It was really good. And Sokka tells him that Aang and Momo are missing, and to which Bumi's like unbothered. He's like, well, if they have each other, they'll be fine. Back on the island with Aang, Aang now decides that he should summon Kyoshi, who explains that she put an end to Chin the Great.
She's proud of it. He's like, but you didn't really kill him. And she's like, yeah, I did. Anyway.
She's like, I don't really see the difference in the distinction you're drawing at all. Like,
she's like, I would have happily murked him.
Yeah, happily. Like, she ends off after telling him the story again of Chin the Great and being like, dude, why are you weak sauce right now? Like, you need to like, and she goes, I offer you this wisdom. Aang, only justice will bring peace.
Woo! Oh, those words. Yes.
Yeah, I just hear like a chant. No justice, no peace.
Yep. Listen, this is my girl. This is my favorite avatar.
Yeah. She's not about that life. Aang says the appropriate thing. I am currently in the process of reading Rise, and Aang says the appropriate thing to where I am at this point. He goes, I knew I shouldn't have asked Kyoshi. No, bro, you should not. Kyoshi is not worried about your feelings in this instance.
She's about getting it done.
Getting it done. Let's get this thing done. And so, as Team Avatar follows the Masters to Iroh, Sokka asks Bumi how he escaped from prison, and he explains that during the eclipse, he took the opportunity to wreck the Fire Nation soldiers who were guarding him to get them up out of his city. He says, he breaks out, and you see like a great like kind of animation and flashback of him breaking out of the cell that we saw him in. And at that point when he breaks out, he goes, it's payback time. And I thought that was great.
Yeah, whole Amashu flashback was excellent. I was like, this is what I wanted to see.
So now, once they arrive at Iroh's tent, Zuko struggles to go inside. But Katara, similar to, you know, again, Katara shows up in the big moments, man. She, similar to how Zuko showed up for her with the thing with her mom, she shows up and she says, you know, do you feel bad for what you did? And Zuko says, I feel really bad. I don't know if I could feel worse about anything. And Katara says, assures him that Iroh will forgive him then. Then that she knows that Iroh will forgive him. And at that point, he goes into the tent, to which we find Iroh sleeping, and Zuko decides, I'm not going to wake him. I'm just going to go ahead and wait here for him to wake on his own. Aang then decides he's going to summon Avatar Kuruk, who tells him that he made the mistake of being too passive during his life and lost the woman that he loved to Ko the Face Stealer. And he wishes that he would have been more proactive. He wish he would have, like, you know, made use of the time that he had, right? So Aang is becoming frustrated because all the advice is adding up to the same thing, right? It's adding up to that he needs to go ahead and just take out Fire Lord Ozai. And he decides that, you know what would be great? Let me summon an air nomad that was an avatar. And he summons Avatar Yang Chen, who was also an airbender. And she tells him that all life is sacred, but that isn't about him. It's about the world. Aang brings up detachment. And she tells him that, yes, there are many enlightened beings that she knows that have reached enlightenment and then let go of all their attachments. But the avatar can never fully detach from the world because their duty is to the world. It is Aang's responsibility to sacrifice his own spiritual needs and to do what it takes to protect the world. Aang seems resigned that the answer is that he will have to kill Fire Lord Ozai. which is tough, right?
Yeah.
For someone, if it's against his beliefs.
I loved this, him talking to all of the, well, not all, but, you know, the past avatars. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, me too. It was really well done. And it allows him to work out, you know, this is quite a heavy topic that they're exploring right now in front of, like, you know, young people that were watching the show at the time and even now. And for the adults, it's like, you know, basically posing the question, is murder wrong? Like, mm-hmm. even if it's against somebody who is a evil person, is it okay? Do you get a pass for, like, stooping down and, like, doing the same thing that they're doing on a mass level to them? So it's very interesting.
And is it the only way? I love the question it's posing, which is essentially like, it is the easiest way for yeah. him to figure out how to kill the Fire Lord. Although I'm not sure that would be easy because he's still learning firebending.
Yeah.
But is it the only way? So it's a very interesting conversation.
In the morning, Iroh wakes up, realizes that he's not alone, Zuko's there, and turns his back to Zuko at first. Zuko tells him how sorry he is, how ashamed he is, and barely gets to finish in what is such a moving and emotional scene. As he's expressing everything to Iroh, Iroh just grabs him and hugs him and embraces him. And Zuko wonders, how could he forgive him so quickly? How could he not be angry with him? And Iroh lets him know, I never was angry with you. I was only sad that you may have lost your way. And now I see that you found your way. And it's so profound. I mean,
I was hysterical. Like, I was sobbing. This is yeah. beautiful.
Super beautiful. Iroh, such a great mentor. And the relationship between him and Zuko, to see them reunited and in that way, it's just super powerful. And it really shows the fullness of the journey that Zuko's taken in that moment. To be back with Iroh and for them to be, like, you know, back on the same page, it's great. At breakfast, Zuko asks Iroh to fight the Fire Lord, and he tells them no. It has to be the Avatar. And tells Zuko that he will have to take the throne once his father is removed. And he'll have to, you know, restore the honor not only of himself, but also the Fire Nation. Iroh tells them that Aang will return because destiny is upon them. He understands now that his dream that he had back when he was young of taking Ba Sing Se as a young man was really about taking back Ba Sing Se from the Fire Nation. That is why he gathered the Order of the White Lotus. Iroh tells Zuko that he'll have to fight Azula and that he's going to need help. Zuko asks for Katara's help. Sokka asks, well, what are we supposed to do? And what's our destiny in this? And Iroh says, what do you think it is? Sokka appropriately says, I think that we'll meet the incoming Fire Nation fleet so that we're basically there to take down the fleet before they get to Ba Sing Se. And then if Aang needs help, we'll be there to help Aang. Iroh believes this, nods in approval. And then Master Piandao gives Sokka, Toph, and Suki a giant eel hound to travel on and a map to the airship base. And Zuko and Katara leave on the back of Appa to head towards the Fire Nation capital. When Aang awaits on the island, it seems that he's floating towards the mountains or that the mountains are coming towards him. Aang realizes, wait, what? The island I'm on is moving. So Aang jumps into the water and he realizes that it's actually an animal that's swimming. He tells Momo and says he has to swim around to see its face. It's a lion turtle. You know, the lion turtle that we found in the library? Yep, that's the one and the same, the lion turtle. And Aang asks it for help. The lion turtle tells Aang, the true mind can weather all the lies and illusions without being lost. The true heart can tough the poison of hatred without being harmed. Since beginningless time, darkness thrives in the void, but always yields to purifying light. Whew! Talk that talk, Lion Turtle. Talk that talk. He touches Aang on the third eye, and he says, wait for him. He will come, and departs, leaving Aang to sit on the top of a pillar of rock. So the episode ends on the comet approaching And Ozai says, it's time for the world to end in fire. It's time for a new world to be formed from the ashes. Ugh, that guy.
The Mad King. Anyway. In part three, Sozin's comet has indeed returned. As the ball of fire heads for Earth, Zuko and Katara head for the Fire Nation capital to confront Azula. Zuko's fearful that Aang won't be able to get the job done, but Katara has faith. She assures him, Aang won't lose.
I feel like that was Zuko trying to push up a little bit in that moment. You know, I wasn't sure. I was like, he was like saying, yeah, nah, like, I mean, why are you shading the dude? Why are you shading him behind his back? I don't know. I think
Zuko is aware of how powerful his father already is without the comet. So I think he's just listen, he doesn't know Aang the way that Katara does.
Yeah,
so I can understand him being nervous, because I'll be honest with you, I was nervous too.
Yeah. Especially after their Melon Lord fiasco. It's pretty rough.
So Azula is enjoying her good life. You know, she's going to be the new Fire Lord. It's her coronation day. Uh-huh. She's getting her mani-pedi on, getting her hair did, and she's snacking.
Yeah.
When she bites on a cherry pit, she goes off on a rant to the servant who bought the cherries in and decides she's going to go easy on her.
What is this? A cherry pit? And what could have happened on what today is? You could have choked on it. Then you know the ramifications of your actions. Oh, God, Azula, calm down.
So much. So she decides to go easy on the servant and just, you know, no big deal. Just banishes her. Tells her to get out of her sight and leave the castle.
Jeez.
Meanwhile, Toph, Suki, and Sokka arrive at the airship base, but the fleet is already on the move. So Toph legit launches them into the air.
Badass. Oh my God. She's so good. Cool.
On the closest ship, which she cannot even see. She's going by instinct.
Yeah, they had to catch her when they landed. That's how crazy it was. She was like, let's go.
They sneak into the control room of the ship. Toph is in rare form. She just like rips the door off. Like, it's great.
And forms it around her. So like, it's crazy. Like, the door's ripped off and she takes the metal and bends it around herself. Oh my gosh. It's crazy.
She's excellent here. And they take over the control room, and as Suki steers the ship, Sokka makes an announcement. He has an idea how to get the rest of the crew together. It's time for an office birthday party.
Woo! Nothing like a birthday party. Bring them all out.
So the crew gathers for this birthday party, and the birthday party gathering is as awkward as most office birthday parties. They don't really know each other. One guy is just happy that, like, the captain remembered his birthday. It's funny. With everyone assembled, they open the bottom of the ship and let everyone fall into the ocean.
Oh, tough. Happy birthday.
Back in the capital, Azula is still on a tear. From her throne, she summons and then banishes the Dai Li because it took them 5 minutes to get to her.
Wild.
Yeah, she's coming apart at the seams here. She has become distrustful of essentially everyone. Mm-hmm. She's just been banishing people all day. Finally, Lee and Lo arrive next and ask her what she's doing. They say they're worried about her well-being, and they suggest that maybe they should postpone the coronation day.
Which one of you said that? They both point to each other. Not me.
Azula orders them to fight in an Agni Kai, but when they tell her they aren't firebenders, she banishes Lee, but she points to Lo. And just a point here, someone is going to have to clarify this for me. Weren't they training her before?
Yeah. Well,
so I don't know what's happening here. So they're not firebenders. But they were training a firebender. A little confusing.
They know the ways of firebending in theory, but they're not. Okay. You know what they should have done? They should have had, since they're both great orators, they should have had a speech off or MC battle. They should have been an MC battle. Lee versus Lo. You know what I mean? Versus on Instagram. Click on it.
I'm just glad that Azula also can't tell the difference between them.
Yeah. No.
It's funny. In Ba Sing Se, the Order of the White Lotus is also ready for the comet. Mm-hmm. They are ready to free the city. Iroh destroys the wall. And they all work together. It is really incredible. It is basically like watching Team Avatar fight.
It's great.
They liberate the city from the Fire Nation soldiers in a truly epic display of bending power. And Iroh finally brought down the walls of the city. But for the residents. And the walls are not just to keep people out. They're also to keep order in the city. Mm-hmm. So I had no problem seeing those walls come down.
Yep. No, it was good. It's good stuff.
Yep. Azula is, you know, a mess. And she decides to give herself a haircut. I don't know why this is happening. She just had her hair done.
She's offended by everything. Like, her hair got done. And then she's like, wait. Like, she's upset because the hair tie or the clamp didn't work properly. And it's like, that's even betraying me. Like, man, Azula's got... I actually feel bad for Azula in this moment.
I felt deeply for her. Like, she... no love between me and Azula, but I really did feel for her.
Sure, for sure.
In the mirror, she sees her mother. And she hears Ursa tell her that she's confused because she's always used fear to control people. Mm. Azula turns around and says, fear is the most reliable way. And says, even you fear me. Ursa responds that no, she doesn't fear her. She loves her. And Azula breaks the mirror.
Yikes. Man.
Yeah. This was tough. I wish that these kids didn't have such mommy and daddy issues. Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
It really is.
Despite all the work that Sokka, Toph, and Suki have done, they can't seem to catch up to Ozai's airship in time. And he begins to burn the Earth Kingdom's forest.
Does he? He's just like, I mean, it reminds me of when early in the series run, they found that burnt forest, and that's when they first met Heibei. Man, he's just like basically singeing the entire earth. It's crazy.
Aang is there to meet him and takes out his airship with earth and fire bending. And for a moment, Ozai looks shook. But as his ship crashes, he goes to meet Aang face on and for some reason takes off his shirt.
Yeah, he's like, okay, it's time for me to whip this ass. Let's go. He takes the shirt off. He's got like the Iron Man boosters coming out of his like feet, flies over to the rock. It's crazy. I was like, damn, this guy could fly the whole time. It's nuts.
I just don't understand why he took his shirt off.
Yeah.
I guess he was like, it's about to get real hot.
Yeah, but he didn't want the robe. He didn't want the robe to get burned up. You know, it was like, man, I got this robe on. It's like covering up. Like, I mean, he didn't feel like he was going to have to fight, but you know what? I'm going to have to get down. Let's go.
Okay. I mean, I was just like, what? This family is vain.
This fucking guy. Yeah, this guy is a mess. He's a mess. There's no question.
Aang and Ozai stand on two pillars of rock to face each other, and Aang gives him the chance to stand down. But Ozai gonna Ozai and gets real extra. Real extra hair.
Oh, God.
Sokka, Suki, and Toph watch from their airship, and they decide they need to focus on the other airship since Aang can manage Ozai. Sokka decides that they will use their airship to crash into the others and bring them down. Just as they are about to destroy the final ship, Suki is separated from the others, but she's all right.
Yep. Azula, I like that in this moment. I like that Sokka drew inspiration from the fight between Aang and Ozai, and that he's like, you know, we're going to do a ship swipe as he did an air swipe. He's like, oh, I got an idea that'll get us some more time. So it was really cool.
Yeah, no, these guys are improvising so well. They had no idea that this is what they were like. They're just really fast on their feet at this point, and it's pretty impressive.
Very.
So over Katara's protest, Zuko accepts, noticing something's not quite right with his sister, and they meet in battle. Essentially destroying the entire palace village. Mm-hmm. Like, they just burn everything. It is beautiful.
Yeah. I mean,
as beautiful as it is destructive.
If utter destruction... You know what it reminds me of in animated form? The beauty of the scene when Yen just, like, lets out all her chaos in the Witcher series, where it's just, like, the fire just going, and you see everything and all the emotion in her face. I mean, you see Azula's blue flame and Zuko's red flame, and you see this like kind of like them going up against each other, and it's being intercut with Ozai and Aang's fight. And when you get to their fight, Azula and Zuko, this music is all you hear is the bending. You don't hear any dialogue. You just hear the music, and the music is so powerful. And it's almost like a fight, but it's like a dance as well. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it did make me think of dancing. These two scenes intercut with each other. Aang fighting Ozai, Zuko fighting Azula. It was really well done. I loved every second of it.
Yeah.
So when Zuko asks Azula why she isn't using lightning, she takes it as a challenge. And she decides that she's going to direct her lightning at Katara, who just arrived to show up behind Zuko. Zuko intercepts the lightning to save Katara, but he is badly wounded.
And it's important to mention, and we'll, you know, that the wound is on the this whole idea of yin and yang, the blue and red dragon, the crossroads, the what we saw of them when they met the dragons, of Aang and Zuko being in the flame, the restoration of honor of the fire, all of these things that are like the balance. Talking about balance, Zuko's wound is in the exact same spot, but in the front where Aang's wound is in his back. So it's really interesting to see that. Both by Azula, by the way.
Through lightning. Mm-hmm. Ozai and Aang are fighting too, but it looks like Ozai is winning, using a powerful combination of lightning and flame. Aang is barely able to get the lightning to flow through him, and eventually lands in the water below them.
And he's talking mad shit too while he's doing this, talking about how all your people were weak. They didn't deserve to live in his world. He's talking shit while he's like, you know, it's wild. Wild to see.
Yeah. I mean, he's enjoying this.
Yep.
He's thoroughly enjoying, you know, potentially killing the Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
So Aang is forced to flee and protect himself in Rock, and Ozai is advancing to finish him just as the episode ends.
Wow.
The stakes are really high. Were low in the invasion, the Day of Black Sun, the stakes feel real high right now.
Very, very high. And, you know, things are getting increasingly dire for Aang inside this rock. You know, he has it and he's using it as a shield, but, it's, you know, he's getting hot in there. And Ozai is really taunting him, like, come out, you can't hide in there forever. Meanwhile, Sokka and Toph are still working on bringing down the remaining airships, and they're struggling also. Sokka uses his boomerang and sword to take out Fire Nation soldiers as he's hurt his leg. The Fire Nation soldiers are there about to firebend. He throws a boomerang to knock one off and then throws the space sword. God, I hated this. I love that.
Yeah,
space sword.
I was like, no, get the sword.
Yeah, then he throws it to take out the other one, but he does save them. Toph can barely hold on to one of the ship's ledges. Another ship crashes into them, and they fall below onto it and survive. But the good news is Suki is steering the ship and is saving them again. Saves the day. Wow, Suki, good run. Inside this ball of rock, back in the fight between Ozai and Aang, Aang is not able to resist Ozai's firepower anymore. When Ozai finally destroys the rock, Aang is forced backwards and tries to protect himself with an ear shield. The scar on his back, connected to one of his chakras, hits the point in the rock, causing him to flash back to where he was shot by lightning, and he immediately enters into the Avatar state. Seeing all of his past lives, all of their eyes light up, everyone who we saw, all the past Avatars, and Ozai begins to taunt him as he's underneath the rocks. Come on out, little boy. And he does. He does come out. Only this time, he grabs Ozai by the beard. It's pretty wild. And manages to subdue him with essentially every kind of bending.
He's like rock, air, fire,
water. Like the whole Avatar intro happens on his body. It's just like all at once. It's crazy. And they all are, he's encompassed by it and it's circling around him, and Aang hovers over Ozai. Back in the battle at Ba Sing Se, it's going well for the Order of the White Lotus, and they've taken back the city for the Earth Kingdom. Good job. Well done. One of the fights here is going as planned, so that's really cool. In the capital, Katara runs to heal Zuko, but she's interrupted by Azula, who starts to bend lightning towards her. Katara and Azula fight for a bit, but Katara's mostly on the run, right? She manages to get behind a pillar. Azula's like, I would prefer our family doctor to take a look at Zuzu. And she starts shooting lightning at her. Katara gets to where she sees, you know, a grate at the bottom on the floor where there's water underneath there. And she realizes, oh, Azula doesn't know this. She manages to lure Azula over the grate with a quick waterbending move that looked like, oh, I'm just going to waterbend. And right as Azula is about to zap her, she pulls all the water from underneath the grate and freezes both of them in the water. In what is a remarkable show of Katara's growth and mastery as a bender, she only unfreezes herself, going with a chain that she has picked up and wrapping it around Azula to put her in bondage. At that point, she unfreezes everything and Azula's hands are chained. Katara then begins to work on Zuko, who wakes up and she heals him. Azula remains chained to the grate, spitting fire and crying as Zuko and Katara looks on. It's really a tough scene. You really see Azula descending into a really dark place, you know? And Aang is basically at this point back in his fight with Ozai, and he's whipping Ozai's ass at this point.
Yeah, he's really... there's no competition.
Yeah, the Avatar state is too much for Ozai. Ozai is a really, really formidable opponent, but Aang is using all four elements to fight him. Every time he tries to do everything, it's the first time we're seeing Ozai on the defensive, and he's chasing him, catches up to him, and it appears that Aang is going to just murk him, just take him out. It's over. Like, he's listened to the Avatars. It's time to do what they all told him. And at that point, he leaves the Avatar state and turns to Ozai. Ozai says, even with all the power in the world, you're still weak. And attacks him. But at this point, Aang uses his seismic sense. Oh, wow. He's learned that from Toph? Crazy. Moves in time. Traps up Ozai in rock. Brings Ozai down to his level and then remembers what the lion turtle told him. In the era before the Avatar, we bent not the elements, but the energies within ourselves. With one hand on Ozai's head and another on Ozai's heart, Aang tries to bend Ozai's energy. At first, the red energy pours out of Ozai and onto Aang, but then he hears the lion turtle say, to bend another's energy, your own spirit must be unbendable, or you will be corrupted and destroyed. Whew! His own blue energy takes over in a flash of blue light, and the two are separated, and Ozai is no longer a bender. He's taken away his bending ability.
Aang found another way.
He found another way, and it's really a powerful way. And to hear the lion turtle saying, to bend one's energy, another's energy, you must be unbendable. Well, there it is. Aang has been pretty steadfast in, I want to maintain the ways of the Air Nomads as the last remaining member of my people. And I don't want to kill this person, but I want to bring order and balance. And that goodness and that unbendable, like, kind of firm belief in himself really brings about the ability to do this, which is awesome.
I mean, this was incredible. I was not at all expecting this to be the way it went. I really thought in the end this was going to be like a Chin the Great situation where like Aang refuses to kill him and then Ozai does something that leads to his own death. That's what I was predicting before I saw this. But the fact that he found another way is really incredible.
It really is. It really, really is. I agree. Aang then re-enters the Avatar state to put out the fires that Ozai and his airships have started. Sokka, Suki, and Toph make their way to him, and he explains that he took Ozai's bending away. Sokka and Toph immediately start talking shit to Ozai. It's great.
It's so good. It's so, like, on brand for them. Oh, they're like, okay, threat over.
Oh, it's so, so great. And then, you know, Suki wants to get in on the action. Says a little line. Toph is like, leave the names to us, honey. Pretty funny. Sometime later, Zuko awakes in the capital, and Mei is there. Hey, Mei, been a while. Glad you're out of your cell. You know, got out. And she's here to help him put on his robe. And she forgives him.
Although she does threaten him.
He better never break up with me again. You better never do it. She will cut.
I mean, she's made it clear. He will not like the outcome.
Yeah, I don't think he will at all. Sokka and Katara reunite with their dad. Sokka's got, you know, a leg injury, and he hops over to his dad, and Katara runs to him, and it's really touching to see them back with Hakoda. All the prisoners from the Day of the Black Sun are gathered there also. The Kyoshi warriors are also there, back in their full warrior costumes, but they have a new warrior with them, Ty Lee. Me and the girls really bonded, she said, while we were in the cell. And I, you know, gave him a couple of classes on chi blocking and they let me in. So she's a Kyoshi warrior now, which is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was dope. She will. But it's interesting that Ty Lee in the beach episode said she didn't want to be one of a set.
Yeah.
And now she is one of a set again.
Yeah, I mean, maybe she had some personal growth inside prison, you know?
Yeah, and maybe she realized, like, I can understand why she would find what she would find in the sisterhood of the Kyoshi warriors is what she couldn't find with Azula and Mei.
Yep.
So I could see it.
And so then inside, Zuko and Aang embrace, reflect on the past year of their life, that Zuko was in search of him, trying to bring him down and restore his honor, and that Aang was in an iceberg, and that now the world is very different. And it will be different. And it's going to be a world that they're going to build together. As they greet the crowd, Zuko tells them that he will restore the honor of the Fire Nation and begin a new era of love and of peace. He is crowned Fire Lord Zuko immediately after. In the next scene, Zuko goes to visit his father in prison and asks him to tell him where his mother is. And Ozai is still all kinds of salty in this one.
It was nice to see him locked up, though.
It was really nice.
After we had to endure multiple episodes of Iroh locked up, I had no problem seeing Ozai locked up.
No, it was good. It's a good look. Mm-hmm. It's fitting for him. Let's keep him in there for a while. Sometime later, all of Team Avatar have gathered. We're unclear on the time frame. Don't know. It's been a while, but maybe not. Who knows? We don't even know how long it's been. But they're gathered in the Jasmine Dragon, Ba Sing Se with Iroh. And Sokka's trying to capture again the moment. He's trying to draw them on a piece of paper, and Katara's like, oh, that's so sweet, you're drawing us. And then she's mortified by what she sees.
Because Sokka is not an artist. Someone needs to have a deep conversation with him. Why are you doing this?
Deep convo. He needs some help. And so, yeah. That is what happens. They all start talking to Sokka about how it is. Iroh's a little takes issue with the fact that he made his gut so big. Suki's like, why'd you make me a bender? And he thinks it'll look better. And then Aang goes outside. He's laughing and happy that they're all there. And he quietly goes outside. And Katara follows him. The music swells. They look out at the liberated city of Ba Sing Se. She and Aang turn to each other. She leans in and kisses him, and we pan up to the sun setting on the story, and also the credits roll up. This is the end of Avatar: The Last Airbender. Roll credits.
And such a satisfying ending.
Yeah, it really is.
It really, these last few episodes really nail it. I love the way the story ends. I think it was so. I have a few minor things.
Yeah,
like, you know, the accidental Avatar state. They were like, you know what? We don't have time for Aang to figure out how to get into the Avatar state. It will. We'll just put him in it accidentally.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I just thought the whole conclusion of the story was really beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really beautiful. I mean, I'll also say the one I really like where it lands. Obviously, I like the implications for this on the comics, and also I like the implications for this in the next series, Korra, for what this does with the pairings and the matches. But I do think, as we've talked about numerous times offline, that they just ran out of runway. You know, from the coronation to the Jasmine Dragon, it's hard to reconcile where Katara and Aang's relationship ends up, even though, you know, ultimately we knew that's where they were trying to take it. We knew that the writers and everything were trying to take it there. But I feel like if we needed more time to get to Ba Sing Se. And that's where it's unclear. How long is this after the coronation that they're all hanging out in Ba Sing Se? And what's happened since then? And what's going on? So there is a little bit of that. But, you know, at some point, you know, just being realistic, you have to realize that they're only going to get so many episodes to do this. And every detail, you almost have to fill in the blanks in your own imagination.
Totally. I feel mixed about the way it ends with the relationship. I don't feel like Aang and Katara need to be coupled up at the end. I would have liked to see how they got from the kiss in the Ember Island players, right? Yeah. Like, how did they get from that point to Katara realizing that she also has feelings for Aang? That felt like a dropped opportunity. But the larger story, I think, ends very well.
Agreed.
So, you know that I'm not a big fan of the Katara-Aang pairing, but I do think that for the most part, I really like the way the story ends. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, I think honestly, I mean, I am a Katang fan. I know people like get at me for that, but I am. And I think it's because of what I know happens the rest of the way in the journey. And that being said, without spoiling anything, it's not easy for these kids, like, after this. Like, it's just not, right? And you should, if you have time, go read the comics. It's really, really fun, people. It's a good time. But I think what I also am really happy about is this is really, if you want to, there's a couple of things that the creators of the show did really well as we're getting ready to transition into our themes and everything else for the series, is they just really did a redemption arc. It's better than a lot of TV shows. I mean, like, people will say, oh, it's a kid show, but you show me a redemption arc better than Zuko's redemption arc on a television show. I can show you one's equal to, I don't know one's better. It's really well done, and they did that really well. And they landed the greater points of the story. Were there things that they couldn't quite clean up because they didn't have enough runway to do? Sure. But the greater points, the defeat of Ozai, the point they're trying to make about peace being the way, the how to restore balance by bringing the Fire Nation into the fold, that all those things need to be done. They really did a good job with those pieces, I feel like. And that's what makes me love the way they ended it.
Yeah, totally. I think that this show really trusts its audience.
Yeah.
And did not speak down to them. They made a lot of choices that were thematic choices, but they scaffolded them. So the complexity of it, of each season built on previous work. This was masterful. And I have to say, I was a person who, when my friend told me to watch this show 10 years ago, I rolled my eyes. Oh, it's a cartoon. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll get to it eventually. Like, I don't have any problem with animated series, but, you know, I don't prioritize them. And I'm so grateful to the folks who talked this up to us and so that we could see this. This was not only just a great show to watch, but it was a phenomenal show to podcast and share with the rest of the fans. It's just great.
I agree. And every week, getting to interact with all of you and talk about this story and continue to go on into this story is really, really, really great. It's been a great time for us. And, you know, there was so many themes, I mean, like, that you could talk about. You know, since this is the last episode, we want to talk about the broader themes, not like, you know, these episodes specifically, but, you know, there's like, I mean, goodness, enlightenment and the spiritual journey. There's trauma, there's reconciliation, there's the consequences of imperialism, confusion with oneself, creating confusion in the world, how we're all connected. I mean, these are really important themes that you could go through. What's one that really you want to speak about and jumps out to you?
I think it's the one about enlightenment.
Yeah.
Okay, so at the end of this episode that we just talked about, Zuko and Aang are reflecting on the last year. It's only been a year for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the journey that they've just both gone on is so impactful. Zuko's is an entirely different person from the one that we met, mm-hmm. but it wasn't easy for him to get there. And often anti-heroes and villains have pretty easy transitions in TV, right? Because you have a limited amount of time.
Yep.
So it's usually like, you know, here's an event that happens that changes their character. And listen, we dunked on Zuko a ton of times, and he frustrated us too. I remember multiple times when I thought Zuko was going to finally make the turn and he didn't.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, but so is redemption.
Yeah.
So is choosing that different path. I always think of Zuko and Jet as being these parallels in terms of how misguided they were.
Mm.
Neither of them was a bad person at their root, but the trauma that they had experienced in their lives turned their personalities into vindictive and vengeful personalities, and they were just misguided. Jet decided to redeem himself, but it was too late. But Zuko, even though he tried and tried and tried to regain his honor, he eventually came to the right place after he made a lot of mistakes. For so many of us, that is the journey that we make as we become the person we want to become.
Yeah.
To me, Zuko's story is the ultimate coming of age story. It's not just about growing up. It's about all the challenges and all the mistakes you make along the way,
yeah,
into becoming an adult.
Yeah.
And for him, becoming an adult also means becoming the new Fire Lord. So I just thought that was really beautiful. And Aang's spiritual journey to enlightenment is so important too. There's so many times where he could have taken a shortcut. He could have changed his values because he's the Avatar. But he, in the end, ran towards himself and inside of himself. And through communing with the spirit world, with those who went before him, the previous avatars, and looking deeply inside himself, he made the right choice in the end with the biggest battle of his life in front of him. That's a hard thing to do, especially when everybody else is telling you, do something else.
Yeah.
Just do what we want you to do.
Yeah.
So I loved the spirituality in this story. I'm not like a practicing Buddhist, but I've read a lot of Buddhist work because it is a spirituality that has brought me comfort in some of the lowest parts of my life. Mm. And I just find it fascinating that both Zuko and Aang's stories have so many Buddhist themes throughout them, just about suffering and attachment and moving through life to find enlightenment, which is the ultimate result of Buddhism.
Yeah.
Is trying to become more and more enlightened. So that's my favorite theme.
Yeah, I think, you know, I share that, but to add, you know, to some other things I think are as well, I like all the things that you said about that. And it's like so present in the story. I really like the idea of, especially thinking about going further down the road in the story, and the world that, you know, the history still continues, right? You have the comics, you got Korra, you have the Kyoshi novels that, you know, are prequels, but still part of bringing color to this story as well. The consequences of imperialism and interconnectedness and how those things work together. I think what I mean by that is that, you know, each action that we have has a reaction. There's a cause and there's an effect. And it really does show up a lot in this story, where you see these characters grappling with what they're going to do, and never more present than what we're talking about in the battle that we just spoke about with Ozai and Aang, where he's really trying to figure out how to how to bring balance back based on this interconnectedness, that he knows that there's no way to like really have balance by just getting rid of the Fire Nation. And we talked about this early in our run of episodes, that it was very clear that the Fire Nation was going to have to come back into the fold some way. It didn't mean destroying the imperial tendencies of the leadership, didn't mean destroying the Fire Nation. But what consequences does that interconnectedness have for, you know, what happens after this? We often heard at the end of Game of Thrones that, you know, we talked a lot about, oh man, what happens to this world 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 60 years down the road? Well, we get that answer in Avatar: The Last Airbender through the comics, and we get that answer also through Korra. But what I love about where the series went so far is that it kind of really shows how there is no action without a reaction, that the choices we make don't just impact us. And it really illustrates the balance, like with the things that we see, the story thread of Zuko's redemption and Aang learning how to become the Avatar, and the way that it's represented through the dragons, through the wounds that they share, through the choices that they make around mentorship. And, you know, Aang starts off really kind of being together with everyone and kind of stays mostly together with the team throughout, but at the end ends up pretty alone, right? Mm-hmm. And Zuko kind of starts off with this moment of being with Iroh, but feeling like he's alone, even though Iroh's right there with them, and then going through that moment of being alone and kind of how their paths just cross, they intersect. So I think like it's very, this theme of interconnectedness and the consequences of our actions and the consequences of imperialism on the whole entire world will continue to play out throughout the different parts of this story that happened beyond Avatar: The Last Airbender. But I really love the way that they handled it and dealt with it on this show.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I'm just grateful. I'm glad that during a time when the news is so bad, mm-hmm. and things seem so terrible, that we were able to enjoy the show. Like, you know, obviously our intro is a joke, but it's not really.
Yeah, exactly.
we were looking for what we were going to do during the pandemic. We had talked about doing this show before. It seemed like it was going to be maybe too much because it's so long, mm-hmm. but I'm so grateful that we did it, that we took the leap.
Me too.
And also I'm really grateful that Netflix made it available again. Yeah. We were like making our way slowly through the Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And we were not doing well in terms of making progress. So this show has definitely had a positive impact on me. It's provocative and it's made me think about a lot of things. And we will return to it for sure.
For sure. For sure.
For sure.
Well, let's talk about that as we end. So I think it's important to acknowledge that time matters. And, you know, we are committed to our, you know, this world, and we'll continue to investigate it and do, you know, content where we can. We will continue to do, you know, put out stuff online, and there's some more things coming. But I think like right now what we want to do is we're going to start making our transition to the next thing that we're going to cover. And that next thing is going to be some mild coverage of, at the midway point of the season, of Lovecraft Country. We really want to explore that world and do something there and kind of look at a world that, you know, is about black nerds. We're black nerds. We want to kind of check it out. So it's really going to be interesting to do that. And also it just fits really well in the time frame of right before we go back to the first show that we ever podcasted, which is His Dark Materials. So, you know, we're looking forward to covering both those shows, and we'll fully keep putting out Atla content and definitely plan on returning to Korra at some point. We will cover Korra at some point. That is a promise. I tell you, that's going to happen.
Yes, we're just not going to do it right now. But we are both committed to providing some coverage of Korra at some point. We want to make sure that we are being true to what we initially set out to do, which was to cover the things that need voices like ours. And it would be a crime almost to let Lovecraft Country, which has been really good so far, so you guys should totally check it out, pass without any coverage from us. So we're going to do a little bit of that before we go back to his Dark Materials, and then we'll see where the new year takes us.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we both, you know, are deep into this world. I'm currently reading Rise of Kyoshi. I love Korra. I've been through the whole entire series, and it's a great world. It's one of my favorites, and that's saying something. Like, before starting this series, I would say that I wouldn't have imagined that I would put it in the same place as far as the love of fandoms that I have as like Game of Thrones and some of the other ones, but it's right there at the top of it. And and from the spiritual themes to all the things we've spoken about throughout, and it has been a joy to cover this world. And we want to give, when we do Korra, we want to give it the same level of care and attention and focus that we would give, that we gave Avatar: The Last Airbender, because it matters that much as a story to us. So, yeah. So that is where we are. Lovecraft Country, next thing that we'll be covering, and then followed by his Dark Materials to close out the year. And we hope you guys keep enjoying our coverage of all these things. And stay with us. All the people who have listened to us since his Dark Materials, it has been a journey, and we're looking forward to getting back to some of that coverage.
Yeah, and thank you guys so much for listening. This has been a wild and incredibly enriching ride to podcast Avatar. So thank you so much for your support.
So great. So great. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.